When a place is desolate and devoid of human beings, it is tragic. But when animals prowl there, the pain is almost unbearable. As the verse in Lamentations says, it is tragic that Mount Zion is desolate and deserted. But not only are people absent, the verse continues, foxes prowl over it. The fox and the cat walk around. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 128.
The Crusades and Jewish Memory. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Simuna alevavchem misbeid mar lekoshra, ki shkula harigatam lehitabel ulehitapra, ki srefat beit elokeinu haolam vahabira. Take this to heart and compose a bitter eulogy. Their murder is worthy of mourning and placing ash, equal to the burning of the house of our God, the porch and the palace. So begins a kina, an elegy, recited on Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, to this day by Ashkenazic Jewry. One of several said, on Tisha B'Av, in memory of and in mourning for, the Jewish communities of the Rhineland that were massacred during the Crusades. The Paitan, or poet composing the stanza, known as Rabbi Kolonimus ben Yehuda, connects the mourning for the temple with the mourning for these communities, saying that the wailing for both should be joined, that on the day that Jews all over the world mourn the loss of the temple and Jerusalem, they should mourn for these communities. And indeed, for centuries, that is exactly what Jews did, and in so doing, they told us something profound about Jewish memory, and especially about the memory of Jerusalem. In 1095, the First Crusade was launched by Pope Urban, and Christendom sought to capture Jerusalem from its Muslim rulership. As we will see, the conquest of Jerusalem by the Crusaders in 1099 had devastating effects for the Jews of Jerusalem, but before that, horror would descend in 1096 upon several of the most significant Jewish communities in the Jewish world that were in the path of the Crusaders, as both Crusaders and locals massacred thousands of Jews. To this day, the communities that are mourned are three in the Rhineland, in what is now Germany: Worms, Speyer, and Mainz. As Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik explained, these events had a devastating impact on Jewry and also on Judaism, as some of the most talented teachers and interpreters of Torah were murdered. I am citing here, just as I draw on my translations in this episode, from the volume of commentary on the Tisha B'Av liturgy by Rabbi Soloveitchik that was masterfully assembled and edited by Rabbi J.J. Schachter and published by Koren. Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke of the devastation wrought on the transmission of the lifeblood of Judaism, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, given that Gedolei Yisrael, giants of Jewish law, were killed and their teachings were lost. This included some of the commentators on the Talmud known as the Tosafists. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, quote, "The historical background is important. The center of Torah in Europe and the school of the Tosafists commenced in Germany, not France. The Torah scholars in Germany were more numerous than the Tosafists in France. Speyer, Mainz, and Worms were densely populated with Gedolei Yisrael, yet we hardly know many of them. All of the Torah scholars of Germany perished, and many of their writings were destroyed. It is a miracle that Torah Shebaal Peh continued in spite of the fact that the center of Torah at that time in Germany was destroyed. Torah Shebaal Peh was able to survive because by then, centers of Torah had already begun to be established in France." End quote. Thus, the First Crusade wreaked devastation on the history of Judaism in many ways, impacting Judaism's practice and transmission in Jerusalem, but also in some of the most important diaspora Jewish communities on earth. And if we look carefully at the elegies recited on the 9th of Av for these communities, we can, I think, note other interesting and poignant connections between them and the Judaism of Jerusalem. In one of the other keynotes, one of the other elegies, one not written by Kolonimus, the poet, the Paitan, mourns for the Torah scholars that were murdered, and he reflects in rhyming Hebrew stanzas, "Mi katze bikvaot umi yisatem beharim, mi yifarek havayot umi yitzaretz shevarim. Who will level the hills, and who will hew down the mountains? Who will solve the puzzles, and who will repair breaches?" This is an allusion to the scholars who interpreted difficult Talmudic passages. And then we have the following. "Mi yafli nezirot umi yaroch nidarim, mi yishaded ma'amakim v'chatu ikarim. Who will articulate Nazarite vows, and who will assess the value of your pledges? Who will plow your fields now that the farmers were gone?" This is a reference to the interpretation of two Talmudic tractates, Nazir, the laws of Nazarites, and Nidarim, the laws of vows. As Rabbi Soloveitchik further comments, the kina, the elegy, is emphasizing that the loss of Torah scholars means that no one will explain these tractates to us. No gadol, no Torah giant, exists to assist in interpretation. Rabbi Soloveitchik said as follows, quote, "In fact, Nidarim and Nazir are two very difficult tractates. If the massacres in Speyer and Mainz had not taken place, there would have been a Gadol who would have written an exhaustive commentary. But the German Torah scholars were killed and there was no one to write the commentary. And to this day, we have trouble studying these two tractates, end quote. To Rabbi Soloveitchik's interpretation, I would humbly add another point. The stanza he cites in this elegy, in this kina, references two specific types of vows that really only applied in the time of the temple. In general, with exceptions, there are not Nazarites today because part of the usual ritual of Nazarite vows is a sacrificial offering in the temple. And in the reference in the elegy to the tractate of vows, mi yaroch nidarim, a reference is etymologically made to a type of vow known as erachin, a pledge of money to the temple. These laws had not really been observed for 1,000 years, and yet they were still studied by these Jewish communities in Germany, keeping the memory of Jerusalem alive, the memory of the temple alive, the memory of the rituals of the sacred city and holy Mount Moriah alive. Now the poet mourns, we have no one to teach us these laws, so that we have lost this intellectual, emotional, and spiritual connection to Jerusalem of yore. What the poet is saying is that in the destruction of these Torah communities in Germany, much of the memory of the life of Jerusalem in the temple period was also eradicated. In other words, the kina, the elegy, is noting a terrible, terrible irony. As they journeyed to conquer Jerusalem, the Crusaders destroyed communities where the Jewish spirit of Jerusalem still lived. The spirit of Jerusalem was transmitted by these community scholars and imbibed by its men, women, and children. Thus, the poet, the elegist, is saying it was entirely appropriate and poignant to mourn for these communities on the 9th of Av, the day on which the temple and Jerusalem were mourned. For to destroy Jewish communities is also to destroy the spiritual Jerusalem that lived in the hearts of those Jews that were murdered. As Rabbi Soloveitchik emphasizes, the mass destruction of Judaism in Germany in 1096 was an eerie harbinger of what was to come. Commenting on a line by Colonimus in his elegy, Ayei Torah v'Talmud v'Halomda, where are Torah, Talmud, and students? Rabbi Soloveitchik connected the mourning for the vibrant Jewish communities of medieval Germany to the mourning for modern Jewish communities destroyed and murdered by Germany. Rabbi Soloveitchik told a haunting story concerning Yom Kippur after the Holocaust in Vilna, centering on one time of day, that of Maftir Yonah, when the book of Jonah is read during the afternoon of the fast. Rabbi Soloveitchik's story should be quoted almost in full. Quote, the phrase Ayei Torah v'Talmud v'Halomda was the phrase used by a Holocaust survivor to describe to me his feelings at visiting Vilna on Kol Nidre night in 1945. Shortly after he was liberated, he returned to Vilna, where he had lived before the war, for the High Holidays. It is difficult to describe what Vilna looked like on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur before the war. In one neighborhood, there were 8 or 9 synagogues, including the Beit Knesset Hagra and a synagogue that dated back to the Middle Ages. This person remembered what the Vilna Shulaf, the neighborhood where the synagogues were located, was like on Kol Nidre night, when tens of thousands of Jews would congregate. On that Kol Nidre night in 1945, he returned to the synagogue where his mother used to pray, and it was deserted. He used the phrase from this kina to describe his feelings. Where is the Torah and those who study it? Her place is desolate, with none to dwell therein. The survivor, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, continued with a haunting story. His mother was a pious Jewess and, of course, attended shul on Yom Kippur. When it came time for Maftir Yonah, she used to leave the shul for 30 minutes and feed her cat at home. The cat would wait for her, and after feeding the cat, she would return to shul. This man, who knew the cat, spent Yom Kippur of 1945 at the home where his parents had lived, and at 4:30 in the afternoon, there was a scratching at the door. It was the same cat waiting for him to feed her, the way his mother had. This visit had a traumatic effect on him. At that moment, he felt the full magnitude of the Holocaust. Indescribable despair and bleakness overwhelmed him. End quote. Rabbi Soloveitchik then connected the destruction of Vilna all the way back to the Book of Lamentations, to Jeremiah's wailing for the Churban, the destruction of First Temple Jerusalem, to a verse in Jeremiah's Lamentations describing foxes walking among the temple ruins. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, quote, this story also illustrates how accurately Lamentations captures the devastation of the Churban. When a place is desolate and devoid of human beings, it is tragic. But when animals prowl there, the pain is almost unbearable. As the verse in Lamentations says, it is tragic that Mount Zion is desolate and deserted. But not only are people absent, the verse continues, foxes prowl over it. The fox and the cat walk around. All he saw was the ruins of the synagogues and the cat prowling amidst the ruins. The only link between the past and present was the cat. This is the same picture, Rabbi Soloveitchik continued, painted by Colonimus, the author of this kina. He certainly was familiar with spire, mines, and worms when there was vibrant Torah study, liveliness, and enthusiasm in the yeshivot and noise and bustle in the street. And now he visits the same places and all he sees is the cat. And he asks, where are the Torah scholars? Behold, her place is desolate. End quote. So Rabbi Soloveitchik lamented. and the way in which Rabbi Soloveitchik mourned on the 9th of Av, connecting the First Temple period, the Crusades, and the Holocaust, highlights a powerful strength of Judaism, its capacity for memory, what Rabbi Soloveitchik himself called its unitive time consciousness, which of course also captures why Jews never forgot Jerusalem and why they kept returning to Jerusalem. One of the most modern resonant Judaic images for me is that of Menachem Begin as prime minister, observing Tisha B'Av, sitting in mourning as Lamentations was read. Begin was, of course, remembering both Jerusalem of old, as well as his own parents and his community, even as he led a Jewish state in a Jewish Jerusalem. The memory of the Jewish people lies at the heart of its eternity, and of course, at the heart of its bond to Jerusalem itself. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Sabbath.